Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Remember, we are also live on Facebook. Please do share this audio and write us your comments on the stories we will be airing.
Coming up on the program, Kenyan police arrest an opposition lawmaker who presided over the symbolic swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga. In the meantime, three media houses remained shut after covering the mock ceremony.
I think it's a big blow to media fraternity, and it interferes with the freedom of the press. It says expressly clear that the freedom of the press is under threat.
Also coming up, never forget, German lawmakers hold a special session to honor victims of the Holocaust.
The German Bundestag would take the opportunity to commemorate the victims of the Holocaust, but also at the same time give the opportunity to a survivor of the Holocaust to actually speak to the German Bundestag, to the German Parliament.
Well, these are just some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I am Shay Meineke with DW News. Germany's parliament, the Bundestag, held its annual commemoration of Nazi victims on Wednesday, a few days after the 73rd anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. Addressing parliamentarians, 92-year-old Holocaust survivor Anita Lasker-Wallfisch detailed her harrowing experiences in the Auschwitz concentration camp and warned against a possible revival of anti-Semitism in Germany and elsewhere. It is the first time since World War II that members of a far-right party, the AfD Alternative for Germany party, were present in the Bundestag. German police arrested three suspected migrant smugglers during nationwide raids on Wednesday. A police statement said they also seized new evidence in connection with an international migrant trafficking ring operating in Europe. German Police Commissioner Chris Korpers gave details of the raid.
The federal police managed to strike a blow against the international traffickers. More than 200 officials in four states were in action. We arrested two people here in Berlin.
Here in Berlin, konnten wir zwei Haftbefehle vollstrecken.
Authorities say they believe the smuggling ring is responsible for recently trafficking some 160 illegal migrants into Germany over the Balkan route. A court in Turkey has ordered the conditional release of Taner Kılıç, the head of rights group Amnesty International in Turkey. Kılıç was first detained in mid-2017 on terror charges for allegedly supporting U.S.-based Muslim preacher Fethullah Gulen, accused by Ankara of trying to overthrow President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Amnesty dismissed terror charges against Kılıç as baseless. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Kenya's government said on Wednesday it would investigate opposition leader Raila Odinga's symbolic inauguration after Odinga swore himself in as the so-called People's President at a ceremony in front of thousands in Nairobi on Tuesday. Kenyan police arrested an opposition lawmaker who led Odinga's inauguration and also a member of parliament who attended the event. Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said three TV stations that had broadcasted the ceremony would remain shut down during a government investigation.
We have commenced a wide-scale investigation targeting individuals and organizations. As long as those investigations continue, the media houses will remain switched off until we have completed some of the investigations that we are carrying out.
Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa has appointed High Court Judge Priscilla Chigumba as chairperson of the National Election Agency. Chigumba will be sworn in on Thursday. Zimbabwe is due to hold elections later this year. And now in sports, soccer star Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has left Dortmund and signed with Premier League club Arsenal for a reported €64 million. The 28-year-old brought the German Cup to Dortmund in 2017 and scored 141 goals during his time with the Bundesliga team. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Leave your comments there on the stories that we are covering, and definitely we will read them right here on air. We begin today's program in Kenya, where the police have arrested a lawmaker who led the swearing-in of opposition leader Raila Odinga in the capital, Nairobi, on Tuesday. The arrest occurred soon after Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i announced that the government had launched investigations into Tuesday's mock inauguration of Raila Odinga as the people's president.
A government shutdown of the country's top three TV channels continues, and the former Kenyan vice president, who had been blocked from being sworn in as Odinga's deputy, says his home was attacked overnight in what he's calling an assassination attempt. Shortly before we came on air, I spoke to Brian Singoro Wanyama, a political analyst based in Nairobi, and I started by asking him what the shutdown tells us about the state of the media freedom in Kenya.
I think is a big blow to media fraternity, and it interferes with the freedom of the press. It says expressly clear that the freedom of the press is under threat, not just in Kenya, but in many other African countries. I think it's a dark time. People are entitled to getting the news as it evolves, as it happens. So any attempts to shut down the TV stations or radio stations is actually a very unfortunate incident.
What does it tell about the political situation in the country at the moment, months after Uhuru Kenyatta was sworn in?
I think this clampdown of the media simply implies that the political establishment is uncomfortable with the robust press. The establishment is very uncomfortable with the way lots of scandals are being unearthed, and therefore it is ready to use the heavy hand to clamp down on media freedom, so that the press people are scared of doing any delving into delicate issues, especially when they're reporting on matters to do with government. It basically points out the fact that the government is very, very uncomfortable. And maybe as it was earlier report that the government of Uhuru Kenyatta, that during the second term is when we shall see the real Uhuru Kenyatta in action. And maybe that's what he's trying to do now. That is not just the friendly, you know, the friendly, suave, streetwise president, but he can also be, you know, be a dictator, or he can also put a freeze farm very hand down so that he can clamp down in any voice, any dissenting voices.
I understand one of the lawyers, Kajuang, who led the swearing-in of Raila Odinga as people's president, has also been arrested. What do you know about this so far, and are we expecting more arrests or clampdowns by the government?
Yeah, TJ Kajuang, who is also an MP for Oraka, the one who led the swearing-in of Raila Odinga yesterday, has been arrested. And definitely it's a pointer to the fact that the other NASA co-principals, namely Raila Odinga, Kalonzo Musyoka, Musalia Mudavadi, and Moses Wetangula, are also likely to be arrested. That clampdown comes basically because there was already a warning that whoever will take charge of the swearing-in of Raila Odinga will definitely be arrested and probably even face the prison charges. I think they want to go for the person who did the swearing-in, first of all, deal with him, and it acts as a warning to any other person who might want to take up that kind of role in any future such situations in the future.
Brian Wanyama, a political analyst from Kenya.
And at this time, I'd like to welcome our users following us on Facebook. Leave your comments there, share them, and of course, you can also debate about what your colleagues are sharing. Liberty Agbo, for example, says something is not right in Kenya. And Munene, he lives in Cologne, is a Kenyan. He says the government did a great job of avoiding confrontation with Raila's supporters. I, however, do not agree with gagging the media. Make the debate flowing, please. We'd like to hear from you, and we'll read the comments right here on air. And Zippy, as you mentioned, you know, before, the former or the vice president, you know, designate of Raila Odinga was not so happy that his home was attacked, was allegedly attacked, you know, by, you know, stun grenades, isn't it?
Yes, you're right, Mugabe. And that came shortly after he didn't turn up for the swearing in of the, as he was supposed to be the vice president, who was supposed to be sworn in as well, along with Odinga. So I think that puts into question what this is all about.
And he has strongly come out to condemn what happened, talking about the resolve that the NASA, you know, leadership and the people have. Let's listen to what he said shortly before we came on air.
Nataka marafiki zetu wote duniani wajue kwamba muungano wa NASA uko imara,
Well, he says, I want all our friends in the world to know that National Super Alliance NASA will make sure the changes that Kenyans want are realized. We feel if we fail to resolve this problem of electoral fraud, then the situation will remain the same in the future. That's why we have decided to take a common stand on the issue and reject election fraud in Kenya. Big comment there, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a good one. And of course, Isaac, many people have been talking about it because we asked on Facebook, could this further worsen the political conflict in Kenya? And Kingsley Sopochuglu says, many African countries are heading to breakdown. Kenya has now two governments. Cameroon is nearly breaking down. Nigeria is shaking heavily due to the mass killing from Nigeria security.
Well, and on Twitter, of course, many people are debating, you know, the crisis in Kenya, which shows no signs of ending anytime soon because of what they say, gagging of the media. For example, Rain Asamoah, he's in Accra, Ghana. He says the revolution will never be televised. Remember, since yesterday, three main TV stations have been shut down and a hashtag is trending, Media Shutdown Kenya.
Yeah, and of course, you're right. There's someone else who says that African leaders should call Odinga to order before it is too late, talking about the political situation in Kenya. Yeah.
Keep the debate flowing and definitely we will join in. Now, the German parliament or Bundestag commemorated the Holocaust on Wednesday. That is today, one of the darkest times in the country's history in which Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime killed at least 6 million Jews during the Second World War.
But some politicians have been questioning whether Germany really needs to be continually reminded of its dark past and whether or not these commemorations are still useful. DW's Sumi Somaskanda talked to political correspondent Peter Craven, who starts by telling us what the day entails.
The German Bundestag would take the opportunity to commemorate the victims of the Holocaust, but also at the same time give the opportunity to a survivor of the Holocaust to actually speak to the German Bundestag, to the German parliament. Everybody is talking about the fact that anti-Semitism appears to be on the rise again in Europe and in Germany.
Indeed, and it comes at a time where the process of remembering itself has been called into question, the way Germans remember this dark chapter in history.
I suppose that's true. A couple of years ago, the then German President Joachim Gauck said something very interesting. He said, there can be no German identity without Auschwitz. And I think many people would subscribe to that as a view, as a perception of Germany and of German identity. But the fact of the matter is that these days Germany is becoming a much more diverse society, with a lot of people coming and living in Germany who have very different cultural backgrounds. And some of them are saying, you know, what has Auschwitz got to do with me? It's not my problem. At the same time, you've got youngsters in Germany, 15-year-olds, saying, look, this was 70 years ago. What's it got to do with me? And more perfidiously, you've got the Alternative for Germany, the new far-right party in Germany, suggesting that that the commemorative culture around the Holocaust is somehow a burden on Germany, that it's time to shake off Germany's guilt. So it makes it very difficult for Germany to keep the focus on never forget.
DW's political correspondent, Peter Craven.
Now, Zippy, back to our top story. You know, Kenyan media houses remain shut. And of course, people are really sharing their comments and how they feel about the story. For example, Daniel Wanyama says, putting off media in Kenya tells that there's no freedom and democracy in Kenya. Daniel Wanyama from Nairobi. And we have someone from Aduka who says, I'm following live from Abuja. Please read his comment.
Yeah, and he says that what are the measures that the government is taking on the swearing in of the opposition leader Raila Odinga as a people's president on Tuesday?
And Babo says, I don't want any crisis in Kenya, but quite frankly, Uhuru would have had a broad and all-inclusive government to calm down frayed nerves and diverse political interests. He's also in Abuja.
Steve Mack says, that is what they do in Africa when you oppose them in truth and all their injustices, then they tag you a criminal.
Yeah. On Twitter, Kalonzo Musyoka also went on to say, truth must prevail. And I think once the international community and all our partners in development of Kenya come to know the truth, reforms can be achieved. He's not happy with the international community. It seems like, you know, they want them to come and be part of the Kenya reform agenda as they would like, you know, to be part of the government be the new leaders. Anyway, we'll be back. Welcome back once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. We are also live on Facebook. Thank you for the comments we have been getting on the stories that we are airing. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, the farmers in Kenya who turned from illegal logging to saving the forest in order to raise butterflies.
Kule kupata masoko mengi.
The fact that we have a vast array of markets in which we can sell our butterflies has given us farmers an opportunity to make big profits.
Tell us what you think about this story of raising butterflies instead of commercial crops. And of course, these farmers who turned from illegal logging or deforestation and thought about of a project that will bring in much needed revenue. Raising butterflies. I like the colors.
That's a good one, Isaac. But before we go there, first let's go to South Africa, where Steinhoff, the global retail conglomerate engulfed in one of South Africa's biggest ever accounting scandals, reported its former chief executive officer, Marcus Yuste, to South Africa's elite Hawks Police Unit over suspected corruption and other financial crimes.
Since December 2017, Steinhoff has lost at least $10 billion and has since been scrambling to sell assets in order to find short-term funds to avoid parts of its businesses being sold off or shut down. So is it possible that Steinhoff engaged in some kind of accounting fraud? And could these losses lead to it closing for business entirely? Questions I put to Wolfgang Drexler, a journalist based in South Africa, has been following the story closely.
There has been fraud, seems to be now rather obvious. I mean, all is hidden so far, especially the extent of the fraud came as a surprise. That the company was a bit on the dubious side was well known. I mean, a lot of people questioned beforehand the accounting practices of Steinhoff, of their moving assets between countries, of parking, at their official balance sheets, having these wonderful tax rates, tax holidays for a long time, like in Poland. So there were many things that made people query that there was something wrong.
Pension funds, not only in South Africa, but also elsewhere in Africa, tend to invest in companies that have a long-term view, hoping that these companies are going to be sustainable. What happens to the people who have invested a lot of their money in the Steinhoff business? And of course, the poor pensioners whose money has been invested in Steinhoff.
I mean, that is always the problem. You obviously invest in pension funds because you trust that the people running them have got an idea what they do. I was a bit surprised when I looked at Steinhoff and spoke to some of these pension fund managers that there were so many people obviously completely unaware or who didn't want to see what was brewing. And they do it obviously for their, as you mentioned, for the small savers, for the people entrusting their money. I mean, most of the time it goes well. People make with these companies like Steinhoff a lot of money. But on and off, there is a company where there is that extent of fraud or, you know, where people try to hide things. And then a share can also basically melt and disappear almost. And then there is not much you can do. I mean, there is, of course, a value in Steinhoff. That means they can split the company, sell the items, and then repay some of the damage.
Looks like an unfortunate situation looming. Now, the company employs more than 130,000 people worldwide. And from the look of things, their potential loss of jobs is quite enormous, isn't it?
It could. If Steinhoff closed its doors, then clearly tens of thousands of people might lose their jobs. It is rather unlikely that we see a cathartic event like that because, as I mentioned, there is value in Steinhoff. Only in the last few months, or let's say 2 years, they acquired, for example, Poundland, a large group in Great Britain. They acquired a mattress firm, a large mattress producer in the U.S., producing, I think it's about a quarter or even more of all mattresses in the States. They bought in 2012 Conforama. That was a huge company in France. So it is not just a company who's got nothing like Enron, you know, the company in the U.S. dealing in nobody knew what they were dealing. That won't be like that with Steinhoff, but the damage will still be immense.
I was speaking to journalist in Johannesburg, Wolfgang Drexler.
On the spot.
Staying in South Africa, Anna Niemann is the coach of the Tanda Lions, a team registered in the Amateur League of South Africa's Football Association. She is the only female coach of any South African men's team, and she remains a controversial figure in her KwaZulu-Natal province, known for its extremely traditional understanding of gender. Anna calls herself a thorn in many people's sides, but she will not back down. The Tanda Lions have risen from being one of the worst teams to one of the region's finest. Her story is brought to us by Sarah Asason in KwaZulu-Natal.
Don't give the possession away. Okay, let's go.
It's late afternoon in Klukluwe, a small town in a rural part of northern KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. A group of young men run up and down a pitch, kicking up red dust as they skillfully jump over rope ladders and hurdles. This could be anywhere in South Africa, guys gathering on a dusty field to play soccer as the sun sets. But there's something different about the Tanda Lions. Standing in the middle of the field, shouting instructions, is a woman with long blonde hair.
Well done, Fundo!
Coach Anna Nyman, originally from Sweden, is a pioneer in South African football. Not only was she one of the first women to coach an all-male soccer team in Africa, she's also transformed women's football in a region where most girls are still expected to cook, clean and look after the house rather than play football.
Now, last year we had 35 teams playing in the regional women's league, which is all-time high. And it's in an area that is very patriarchal, very traditional. We still don't have electricity in the area, no running water. The girls are supposed to still go and fetch water for the family needs. But still, the girls are allowed to play. And men are supporting it, boys are supporting the girls when they're playing. So we can definitely see a big change.
You are coming in a little bit too narrow, so in your first touch you will get into pressure, right? Make sure that you're creating a better angle.
Anna Nyman came to South Africa 10 years ago to launch a program for women's football in rural KwaZulu-Natal through Football for Life, an NGO supported by the Swedish professional team FC Rosengård. She coordinates girls' soccer teams, promotes female coaches and supports players in the Umkhanyakude district. But what makes Anna Nyman stand out in Klukluwe isn't her involvement in women's soccer. It's the fact that she coaches a male team, the Tanda Lions. She met them only a few weeks after she first arrived in South Africa.
When I first came down here, I was lost. I didn't have any context to settle down in, actually. And my safe place has always been in the field. And I was going down to the soccer field there to just take a run. And I met with the soccer team and I played with them. And apparently I impressed on them when I was playing. And they were on the look for a coach. So they actually approached me through the management of Tanda and asked if I could assist them.
She took the job and now she's been the team's coach for nearly a decade. Team captain Piwi Imbuyisa remembers the day he first met his new coach.
My first day there, I was surprised when I feared that the coach is the lady. I was expecting that it would be all the men's day, but then I was surprised when I met her, and I was very impressed to see her intelligence.
The Tanda Lions have embraced their coach, and the team has climbed from the bottom of the league to being one of the top sides in the region. She's also changed the view of women's football and encouraged girls to take to the pitch.
Sarah Asason with that report of Anna Nyman.
And Zippy, do you know of any female coaches training male teams?
Well, not any, Isaac.
Well, at this stage, I would like to you, the listener, tell us of any female coaches that you know are training or coaching men's team. I myself, I know one. Oh. Shan Yueng Ting, she's in Hong Kong. She's the female coach who took a men's team to a national title. Imagine that. Isn't
that's
that great?
A good one.
Yeah, so our Facebook users, you know, can tell us more. If you have any in your country, a female coach who has made major strides in men's football, in particular, not female, but men's football. And we'll be back right after this.
Living Planet Africa.
And And for our Living Planet segment this week, we take you to Kenya's Arabuko Sokoke Forest, where there's been a problem with conservation and illegal logging. The local farming community was chopping down the forest, and with it, the butterflies, birds, and other wildlife were disappearing too. The forest is home to about 30% of Kenya's butterfly species and 25% of the bird species. Now it is the delicate butterflies which have become the unlikely solution to conserving the whole forest. As Andrew Asike found out, take a listen.
Here at the Arabuko Forest, it's not difficult to see why the beautiful jewel colors of the butterflies are being referred to as flying gold. But the farmers who have given this nickname to the fragile insects are not just admiring their beauty. Rather, they have realized that instead of getting rich through illegal logging, the farmers can make more money rearing the butterflies and selling them to markets in Europe and America. Arabuko is the largest indigenous forest on the East African coast. Katana Charo is a farmer. He is a member of the innovative community-based conservation project, which has changed the farmer's perception of the riches which reside in the forest.
The fact that we have a vast array of markets in which we can sell our butterflies has given us farmers an opportunity to make big profits. It has also helped in recruiting many farmers who used to destroy the forest by logging. Now, more and more farmers are queuing up to join the business and turning their backs on their old ways, which led to the destruction of the forest.
In the past, the farmers could earn a maximum of $150 per week from the illegal logging, but often it was much less. Because it was illegal, the returns were not guaranteed. Now that the farmers have been taught which butterflies are wanted, on which plants they tend to lay their larvae, and how to rear a butterfly without damaging the indigenous population, they have realized that butterfly rearing provides them with security and a long-term future. Bernard Iha, another farmer, explains how the community rears their butterflies.
This project was basically introduced with the objective of improving community livelihood to those who are living adjacent to Arabuko Forest, and also to win their support and change the perception and attitude towards conserving Arabuko Sokoke Forest. They have established a butterfly breeding cage within their homesteads. On Mondays and Fridays, they deliver the pupa to Kipepo Butterfly Project here where we are.
The farmers and the butterfly conservationists have identified over 263 species in the forest, of which 70 have commercial potential. The Kipepeo Butterfly House in Kilifi County is where the farmers take their butterflies while they are still in the pupa stage for export. Hussein Adan, the Kipepeo project manager, says that the butterflies are exported for exhibition purposes.
This project was basically introduced objective of improving community livelihood, those who are living adjacent Arabuko Sokoke Forest, and also to win the support and also heart and also change the perception and attitudes towards conserving Arabuko Sokoke Forest.
The farmers are paid around $150 to $200 per week, money which they say is enough to cater to their needs and school their children, among other things.
Andrew Asike with that story of how butterflies in Kenya are conserving the forest that was under threat from illegal loggers. Back to our top story, you know, Kenyan police arrested an opposition lawmaker who presided over the symbolic swearing-in of Raila Odinga. And of course, three media houses are still under lock. Now,
yes,
Zippy, you know, Larry Mbado is one of the prominent journalists in Kenya.
Yes,
he's been
right.
Tweeting that I was in control room producing NTV Kenya's coverage when we were switched off. I'm stunned by the government's justification for this flagrant violation of our constitution. He goes on to say, if journalism is now outlawed in Kenya, I'm ready to be investigated. Strong tweet.
Yeah, I think that is a reaction. And the Citizen TV MD Waruru Washira also talked about it and said that they were also shocked about that event by the government of shutting down the media. And he said this is actually gagging the media.
And one last one. Robert Kinige says, how does the constitution protect the rest of us from your own biases as media houses? Many thanks for those comments. And on behalf of the team, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.